Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 113 for the weekend starting Friday, 10 October 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like banned films in SA revealed on Tech Central.
No, never. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central, on Google Plus at Plus Tech Central, and on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the Kalahari-Takealot merger.
We also chat about DStv's Catch Up Plus and the big operators crying about the unfair over-the-top players.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we must pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
Hi, Duncan.
Good. We missed the last two Fridays recording. I think 2 weeks ago you were in Tanzania.
Yeah.
How was that? You went out there with Vodacom.
Yeah, it was very interesting. So good to see. They were showing us M-Pesa, and it was really interesting to see how the locals embraced it there and how big part of the economy it's become, not just as a payment or wallet service. But actually being used in their commerce, in the commerce industry especially within their rural areas.
Okay,
very interesting, very very interesting.
Cool. Well, let's get on to this week's news, and there's plenty to discuss. And I think the big news this week, it overshadowed everything else, I think, and took us by surprise, was the announcement by Takealot and Kalahari that they were going to merge.
Yeah, I certainly thought it would come. Obviously, Takealot is going to be the reigning champion there, but I always thought that Kalahari would be the one that acquires other businesses.
Very interesting that Naspers or the decision's been taken to drop the Kalahari name entirely. So in future it'll be just the Takealot brand. One wonders if Naspers is going to retain that Kalahari brand and use it for some other thing. At some point, perhaps not e-commerce, perhaps something. It's because a lot of brand equity associated with the name Kalahari.
Yeah,
they spent a lot of time investing in that brand over the years. The Takealot brand is a lot newer. It's only been around for 3 years. Before that, the company, of course, was called Take Two. Before Take Two, it was called something else, if I recall.
I
forget what. But interesting development. It's difficult to know the scale of this thing because no numbers are being revealed. The companies aren't talking any further about the deal. All we know is that Naspers is buying or taking a 41% stake in the merged business. From Takealot's majority shareholder, which is an international investment company based in New York called Tiger Global Management.
Mm.
And I think what really drove this whole thing was that deal or that announcement that was made back in May now, where Takealot announced that they'd secured $100 million or over a billion rand in funding from Tiger Global. And I think that changed the whole equation.
Yeah.
It really put Takealot in a much stronger position. And I think Naspers may have taken a look at this willingness to invest by this big international investment firm, which, by the way, has was an early investor in businesses like LinkedIn and Facebook as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And has decided that, do we want to try and compete with someone who's prepared to put $100 million on the table to be a big player in the South African e-commerce market? And I think the answer to that question is no, we're not.
We can't beat them, join them.
We can't beat them, join them. And that's exactly what they've done now. So Naspers is a 41% shareholder in this new business. And I think Naspers is quite used to being a minority shareholder in these sort of businesses. So the thing that accounts for most of their value on the JSE, Tencent in Hong Kong, China, they only own a 1/3 stake in, so it's not like they want to have control over everything. But interesting deal. And there have been some comments about what this means. I think that people who are big fans of Takealot have expressed concern that perhaps Kalahari. There's a perception perhaps that Kalahari's customer service is not as good as Takealot's, and worries that perhaps some of the bad practices at Kalahari will come be taken on board at Takealot. We'll have to see. We also don't know what the impact this is going to have on jobs. There could very well be an impact on jobs because they're talking about operational efficiencies here.
Yeah,
I'd imagine they want to create, you know, if they've got duplicate warehouses in Cape Town, I'm sure they'd want to, one of the first things they want to do is create one warehouse.
Oh, yes, yeah. To reduce, streamline the entire business.
Exactly, yeah.
And I mean, how did Kalahari do before then? I mean, they weren't doing too well, hey?
No, they were loss-making. They revealed in the statement both companies have been loss-making. I think they said Kalahari, or I forget which one, but they said one of them had been loss-making for the past 4 years, and the other ones have said for many years. Neither business clearly was doing that well from a bottom-line perspective. I think both have been enjoying good growth from a top-line perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's clearly difficult to make money in this very low-margin online retail business.
But it's still growing, and I think, as the industry matures, or the consumer space matures, where more people actually start embracing this e-commerce space, I think this merger could pay off in the long run, especially when it comes to the logistics. If they can get the delivery times... Not that there's been a particular problem, but if they can get their delivery times and improve them to such a degree that nobody else can really compete, I think there could be a very interesting business case on the cards there.
Yeah, so a lot of people joking this week about what the new business might actually be called if you merge the two names, as they always do with these things, you know, Mike Crockia and then the merger of Microsoft and Nokia. The two I particularly liked this week were the most common one was Takahari or Takahari. And the one that really appealed to me was Kalahot.
Brilliant.
But no, the company will be called Takealot going forward. That's assuming the Competition Commission, of course, approves the deal, which isn't guaranteed. I don't see why they wouldn't, but they may ask some questions about what this would mean for competition in online retail in South Africa.
Yeah. Look, I certainly hope this build a stronger e-commerce industry, because there's a lot of players that are heavily dependent on it, and they're not the biggest players, but a lot of small shops that make a solid living online, and they're not protected by a larger corporate. So yeah, let's hope we see some good things from this.
Sure. So the other news this week, had a lunch session with the executives from MultiChoice, with John Kotsaftis, who's the CEO of DSTV Digital Media, and with Mark Rayner, who's the Chief Operating Officer of the company. And they've announced that they're going to, towards the middle of next month, they're going to launch the online access to the Explorer personal video recorder decoder that they sell. They're going to do this via, we know this already, they've already announced earlier this year that they're going to do this by means of a dongle or a connector that plugs into the Ethernet port of the decoder and then provides a hotspot or access to the internet via your Wi-Fi connection. You can also plug in Ethernet directly, which is what I'll be doing. The idea now is that they're going to launch a number of new services based on that. Two they've announced this week. The first is that you'll be able to set recordings remotely. So you'll be able to go into your the EPG on the smartphone app, for example, and say, well, I want to record this at this time, and apparently the app will then take precedence over whatever is currently set on the PVR. So if there's another program set to record, it'll override it. But very clever, and I think a very smart idea, and it's these things really do help with getting people to watch television more, I think, which is half the challenge these days. People with the smartphones looking at Twitter and Facebook.
It's a
great feature, yeah, because you're like, damn, I forgot that show is on this afternoon, or
I'm running late, let me start it before I get home.
Yeah, damn, I'm going to miss the rugby because I'm sitting at the shops with the wife shopping, I'm going to miss the first half of the game. Just quickly record it and then get home and start watching. I think it's a
feature that I wanted when the PVR first launched. I think there were talks about it back then, it's good to see they're finally launching it.
No, it's an excellent feature. And the other one, the arguably bigger feature they're going to announce, or they have announced, which will be launched in November, is something called Catch Up Plus. DSTV subscribers will be familiar with Catch Up on the Explorer and other PVRs. That allows you to... basically on the box on the PVR version, they push certain content to the hard drive which you can then watch watch later. Of course, the limitation is the size of the hard drive. Mm-hmm. Now they're launching Catch-Up Plus, which will increase the size of that library. So there'll be a volume of content available on the server, pretty much like the online model now, but working with the online connection on the box, which they're introducing.
And then there's also going to be downloads, isn't it? Additional video on
demand. Not immediately. So they're going to offer this video on demand product, but then which will be through a download type service. So it's not a true streaming video on demand type solution.
You'll have to download it first.
You'll have to download it first and then watch it. They say that that they needed to do this because they want to guarantee the experience. They don't want consumers to be unhappy, you know, if the internet connection is not good enough, and then they sit with buffering on the video stream. They are, however, planning to introduce it next year. So I'm not quite sure what they're going to do between now and then that's going to resolve the South African broadband situation. Or they're going to introduce some sort of new technology or something that makes that streaming quality better. I'm really not sure. But they have said that by, I think, the second quarter of next year, they're looking to introduce streaming through the Catch Up Plus service as well.
I'm sure it's just a matter of kind of getting users on board, trying to use the service, and then switching on the streaming. I'm sure
it's understand it.
Yeah.
And then you have an option of, do you want to stream it or you want to download it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then if consumers experience problems with the stream, they can just download.
Yeah, I mean, considering the DSTV market, I think they may have some problems by just launching a streaming service, because a lot of those users who have come to expect on-demand everything by a satellite service will have a bit of an issue if they start to stream something and the bandwidth connection doesn't allow it, because they're not technically orientated to understand that you need a decent broadband connection. So I think it's an education drive. But having said that, I've been, for the last two Springbok rugby games, I was enjoying it with somebody that streamed it on the internet via their DSTV account. And the experience was very good. I was quite impressed, up to a point where I thought, it would be so nice if DSTV offers this.
Was this through the SuperSport app?
Yeah. No, through. So you log on via the website. Yeah. We do catch up, but the SuperSport also does live. So you can watch sport updates.
Okay.
But you can also watch live sporting games. And it's full HD. It's like you're watching a cable service. And it's very, very good, apart from one or two buffering issues that we had. I mean, on a solid line. I was very impressed. Showing the quality of that, adding it to the Explorer decoder, allowing them to stream. You just need a decent broadband connection. We know that.
Yeah,
They certainly have the technology, I think.
Yeah, I've been meaning to set up Catch Up for some time. I keep running into some sort of obstacle when I try and set it up with my password or something. But I must actually sit down and just figure out what the issue is and get it signed up. So I do need to play around with it. But John Kotsaftis was showing me the SuperSport app streaming in HD over a mobile connection on his iPhone 6, as it happens, looked pretty cool.
Yeah, and the app makes it very easy. I mean, I know a lot of people who would use it on their iPads. Even if they've got the TV in the living room, you don't go to bed at night, you catch up on some programs on your iPad, and it works very well.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. And of course, if you don't want to burn bandwidth, you can always use a different solution like the Walker, which uses mobile broadcast television, which is very useful as well if you're away and you don't have access to a TV and you desperately want to watch a game of rugby or something.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't have HD on that, though.
You don't, no. No. Good. Well, I think our last story we're going to discuss this week, and it's really been the big story of the last week and a half, I think, and that's all this battling and complaining and whining, if you listen to Alistair Fairweather and his column on Tech Central this last week, by the big operators about over-the-top players.
Mm.
It's an interesting discussion, and it really was the focus. A lot. It was certainly discussed in some detail at the ICASA hearings in the last week on the state of competition in the ICT sector. And certainly we've seen MTN, Vodacom and Telkom in particular all saying that the OTTs, as they're called, the over-the-top players, need to bring more to the game. The accusation, it started with my discussion with the new CEO of MTN South Africa, Ahmad Farouk, a couple of weeks ago, where he said that, he didn't specifically say they have to pay their way, but he said that the way they're using the networks at the moment is unfair, because the operators are spending billions of dollars building next generation mobile networks, which OTT players like WhatsApp are then using to compete with those same operators. Now, from an operator perspective, I think I can almost understand that argument. It's you're investing all this infrastructure, and then this third little startup comes along and starts taking away all your revenue. But on the other hand, I don't agree with it, because, you know, the future is data, and the mobile operator is there to provide a data platform over which you will do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I think the tension is almost coming in where the mobile operators still rely on voice services for the bulk of their revenue. They haven't made that transition to data becoming the bulk of their revenue yet. They're getting there, and they will get there. But I think the concern, the worry, is that perhaps OTT services, and particularly voice OTT services, are going to pull that voice rug from under the operators before they've had a chance to restructure or redo their businesses for the data era.
Yeah. It's happening so quickly.
It is happening quickly. And I suppose the risk is, you know, if that voice revenue disappears overnight, they haven't, they don't yet have the revenue that they expect to get several years out from now from the data side of the business. I think it's also about the operators desperate not to be dumb pipes over which third party players profit, where they effectively become public utilities. Over which people provide services. They don't want to be that. They're certainly not the big guys. They want to expand into all sorts of value-added areas because that's what they believe they need to do to maintain their profit margins and to keep their revenue and their earnings growing into the future.
Yeah,
it's a difficult one. You know, my inclination, I've written a column on this, is that these guys are going to have to make peace with the fact that they're dumb pipes at some point. What's your reference?
Yeah, and it's certainly we're seeing the same thing happening in the US right now. They're facing a lot of the same challenges.
It's operators all over the world.
Operators, And I completely agree. It's a difficult thing from an operator's side because you can understand why they feel that, you know, they are being disserviced because they are losing a lot of money if people are moving away from paying for their services. But having said that, we know that technology is moving at such a rapid pace and the internet and data specifically is opening up this new world of technologies that people rely on or starting to rely on more and more. And these network operators need to realize that they're either going to provide the data for those services or they need to embrace and potentially build their own technologies that could, you know, be competition to whatever these OTT players is that they're concerned about. It's a very difficult thing. I don't think it's something that can be solved overnight. But it's inevitable. It's going to happen. If they've got the infrastructure and people can provide services for the internet, not just for South Africa, so it's not just somebody saying that MTN is going to be disserviced or Vodacom is being disserviced. Any network operator is going to suffer from this. It's a difficult one, but I do think they need to embrace it and try and embrace the fact that they're providing the data. That's what they're strong about. If they can make...
So there should be dumb pipes, in other words.
They should be dumb pipes. But if they can provide other services that make them more than just a dumb pipe, you know, that's kind of their... That's where their technology needs to come into play and they need to prove themselves.
It's quite interesting that that these OTTs are coming into the market and disintermediating the mobile players while the mobile players are attempting to disintermediate the financial services sector.
True.
Because they're coming in with services like M-Pesa and other mobile money solutions and they're trying to one-up the banks. The OTT guys are coming in trying to one-up the telcos through offering voice and other services that the telcos have traditionally provided.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of sort of cross-industry convergence going on here that I think has rattled a few cages as well. Anyway, that's the big argument. I think it's going to be a story that's going to be with us for at least the next 5 years. In fact, I think the story's, if anything, the story's just going to become more intense. What happens in the future? Do they start, if WhatsApp voice suddenly takes off and knocks 50% off the revenues of the big mobile operators, do they block WhatsApp? If they do it together, they'll probably face a Competition Commission investigation. Mm-hmm. If they operate separately, then then users will probably switch to other networks. Yeah. They're in a very difficult position, and I don't envy them. But perhaps the operators that are successful in the future that are the ones that learn to love being dumb pipes early on and figure out how to make money from it, rather than trying to offer value-added services and hang on to the voice business, which, quite frankly, is going to go away in the next 5 years.
Yeah. That's no secret. And I think if they do the data side really well, much better than what they can do now, provide really good high broadband service on a mobile device, no matter where you are in the country, you know, that could potentially be the answer, because then, you know, they could make money from providing that service, and then it doesn't really matter who's over the top. But yeah, I'm not the financial guy sitting in that board and having to make that decision.
Cool. Well, that wraps up the news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Let's start with our winner and loser of the week. I think our winner is really easy to pick.
Yeah.
I don't think it happened this week. I think it was actually last week already. Yeah. But since we haven't done a podcast for a couple of weeks, our winner this week has to be Mark Shuttleworth.
Mm.
He won that big Supreme Court of Appeal case against the Reserve Bank. And the Reserve Bank has to pay him back, plus interest, the 250 million rand that it took from him when he repatriated his money overseas. I think it was in the region of 2.5 billion rand. And the Reserve Bank said, thanks, we'll take 10% of that. Thank you very much. And clearly, Mr. Shuttleworth was not very impressed with the Reserve Bank and took him to court and won. And the Reserve Bank now has to pay him, I believe it's an amount of 380 million rand, if you include the interest. And particularly, I think what makes Shuttleworth our winner this week is that he then promptly announced that he was going to take all of that money and put it into a trust, legal trust, or a trust that will help ordinary people fight the government in issues relating to the South African constitution. In other words, creating a trust that's there to fight for constitutional democracy. So bravo to Mark Shuttleworth. I think... I think that's absolutely fantastic. I think if that was me, I would have taken the money.
I'm sure his bank account is more than sufficient.
No, he's still got billions in the bank. But I think really a great gesture by Mark Shuttleworth, and congratulations to him, our worthy winner of the week.
Well done.
Our loser of this week is a politician, and that's our Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, who seems to be a bit absent. He's been in the position for coming up for 3 or 4 months now, and still we've seen no final policy on digital terrestrial television. Rumours that this may only come, in fact, in the first quarter of next year, which would put us just a couple of months away from the deadline to actually complete the migration process, which clearly isn't going to happen. There seems to be no urgency from this department at all under this minister, which is a complete turnaround from the previous minister, Yunus Karim, who moved with great speed on all of these issues. And then there's the post office strike, which has been going on for 10 weeks now, and the Minister of Communications, Telecommunications and Postal Services finally deemed it necessary today, 10 weeks later, to put out a statement urging the unions to go back to work. Quite frankly, this minister should have had his boots on and his sleeves rolled up trying to sort this issue out ages ago.
Yeah.
The lack of delivery is really a major problem for the country and for business. And this minister seems not to realize that there are a lot of urgent matters on his plate and seems to be dawdling along at a snail's pace on all of them. So for that, our loser of this week, a well-deserved loser this week, is Siyabonga Cwele, the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So don't laugh, Duncan, but I've been playing...
I've just seen it on the show. Snapchat?
Snapchat, yes.
Why?
But not for the reasons you think. So one of the indie video makers that I follow quite passionately online, because I really admire what it does, a guy called Casey Neistat. He lives in New York, married to a South African girl. But he produces really great movies. And he recently, you can maybe call it a marketing thing, I'm sure they approached him to do this. But he's been producing movies on Snapchat. So basically, for whatever event or whatever cause he's doing or whatever story is trying to make, using the platform of Snapchat to create a one-off movie that's available for 24 hours instead of a messaging service where he would message people. So from that point of view, my pick is Snapchat. I really enjoyed some of the movie side or the stories that I've been seeing being based on Snapchat. And the platform has embraced this. They've got a feature that allows you to create movies throughout the day that you can share with people. I still think I would love to have those movies linger a little longer than 24 hours, because you kind of need to stay on top of it. But I think that's where the younger demographic comes in. But as a storytelling platform, I think Snapchat has really shown its value to me. More than a messaging platform to communicate with others. So yeah, Snapchat, I mean, it's available for all platforms, snapchat.com, but it's worth checking out. And if you want to follow Casey Neistat, you can just search for him on Snapchat and see some of the interesting things that he's doing.
Cool. Can we link to any of that stuff in the show notes on the website?
Well, no, you'll have to install the app.
Okay.
And then, yeah, because it's only available for 24 hours. There's no live links to any of the content. I see.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll put a link to the app. So if you're interested in seeing that, go take a look if you're not already a Snapchat user, although I don't think there are a lot of Snapchat users on listen to this podcast. Cool. My pick this week is something called Radiant Player. As you know, I'm a user of Google Play Music Services, All Access, I think it's called. It's a really good music service. It's not available in South Africa, but it's very easy to get access to if you really want it. And I've been looking for one for Mac for a while, and I haven't been able to. You can either stream it through the web, through Chrome or whatever your web browser is, but I always liked a separate app. On Windows, I've created a little Chrome, I think it's called like a Chrome app that you can put in your Windows task tray, but you can't do the same on Mac. And Radiant Player basically just connects to the Google Music service. It's like a skin on top of Google Music. It connects to the web service, and you put in your details, and it behaves like pretty much like the Google Music service on the web, except it's an app for Mac, and it works really well. So if you're a Google Music user, I know there are probably not a huge hell of a lot of you here in South Africa or listening to this podcast that use that particular service, and there are plenty of good alternatives available now, like Radio and Simfy and others. But if you do use the service and you happen to use a Mac, so it probably leaves about two or three of you, then check out Radiant Player for Mac OS X. It's quite cool.
Is that just for Google services?
It's for Google Music All Access.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
It looks very nice. It looks very nice, actually.
Yeah, it's very slick. In fact, I prefer the interface too. It's similar to the web interface of Google Music, but I actually prefer it. They've done a few design tweaks here and there. It really looks good.
Nice. I'll go check that.
Good. Well, that's the show for the week. As always, if you've got any feedback, please do send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, take care from Rachid and myself. Cheers.
Ciao.